Dare Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Malcolm Sparrow served a decade with the British Police Service. He conducted internal affairs investigations and many criminal investigations. But then academically, he moved on and became professor of the practice of public management at the JFK School of Government at Harvard. He's author of the new book, Handcuffed, What Holds Policing Back and the Keys to Reform. Professor Sparrow, good to have you with us today on Air Talk.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
One of the things you really look at here is the emphasis over the past couple of decades on what's dubbed community policing, the idea that law enforcement does more than just respond to reports of crime, that it gets involved with the community. It becomes a presence that isn't seen as consistently adversarial. How much has that emphasis on community-based policing actually taken place versus being talked about?
Well, apparently much less than we all would have hoped. In fact, this is my second book on policing, and the very first one way back in 1990 described the emerging ideas at the time. They were community policing and problem-oriented policing, and these were pretty much accepted as early as 1990 as the conventional wisdom in terms of reforming police departments. And then what barked my attention in the current crisis in policing was following the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. There was eventually an inquiry done by the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division. They wrote the most extraordinarily devastating report about the department and what it stood for in the way that it operated. And then when you come to the recommendations section, a number one recommendation is that they should explore the possibility of community and problem-oriented policing. And that's in 2015, which is 25 years after everybody thought they knew this. And that sparked in my mind the obvious question, what on earth happened to these core reform ideas, and what has thrown the police off that particular journey? What else are they doing instead? And how many of the other multitude of ideas about different police strategies, which ones have come to the fore instead?
Yeah, and so what happened to community-based policing, in your view, as you looked at departments around the country?
Well, the idea itself, probably worth just saying what it is, because people obviously mean it different things by the term. I think it's that simple notion that police and community will work together in two ways. First of all, to set the priorities and agenda for police action. And then secondly, to achieve those purposes, whatever they are. That's agreed. Now, that's not a complicated thing to say. But then you watch the development and implementation over the years. There's some very simple-minded substitutes that have been used, and then some rather serious and complex distractions from the idea. Simple-minded stuff. Some police departments just used the language but didn't change anything at all. Said we're doing community policing, but no one could tell that anything had changed. Other departments created tiny little dedicated units called a community beat officer unit. And what they sometimes tended to do is insulate the rest of the department from any obligation to change.
What came to the fore then in place of the practical application of community policing, in your view?
Well, one of the major distractions has been, since 9/11, the effects of counterterrorism. This makes the police agencies part of a third network. They were already a part of two. The first is the part of the criminal justice system working with courts and probations and so on. And then the second one with the notion of community policing was that police became much more a part of municipal government, responsible along with others for the quality of life in the cities. Now, with the emphasis on national security and counterterrorism, police become part of a not only a national but an international network, very much focused on different issues. And I think that that had some effect in transforming the priorities with respect to community relationships. It not only changed what we wanted from communities, because police then are hungry for intelligence and will get it any way that they can, but also it changes the selection of communities we're most interested in towards those that could be the genesis of terrorists and security threats. And that's that's a very different idea than working with all neighborhoods on their own public safety issues. And there's a competition for attention and resources between the bigger, broader national agenda on security and the local agendas that have more to do with the needs of the local people.
We're talking with Malcolm Sparrow, who is a Harvard JFK School of Government professor of management. But his management expertise is something that he's applying to law enforcement. He himself was in law enforcement in the UK for a decade and studying U.S. police departments to look at some of the ways that they conduct law enforcement in their communities. One of the things that we have heard from law enforcement officials themselves, we heard this from the chief of the Dallas Police Department, we've heard it from others, that police are being asked to address very deep-seated societal problems. And so all the economic, all the educational deficiencies that are overrepresented in certain communities, the absence of fathers in the home in communities where there's a high young male crime rate, all of these factors, police are sort of the backstop for this, something that teachers have often said who work in disadvantaged communities. Your thoughts on police being asked to be the ones to sort of clean up or deal with all these societal problems?
I think it's always been so, and that's not just a peculiarly American situation. I think lots of people have said, well, if you regard police as part of the municipal apparatus responsible for every aspect of security and citizens' life, then the police stand out because they have a very well-known telephone number and they're available 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. That makes them the first port of call for all kinds of issues that aren't exactly public safety or crime control, and they've run across needy people and mentally ill people and homeless. And a very important piece of the way that they operate, therefore, is the triage operation that they represent with respect to other governmental services. That's not new. That's quite normal. But what that does is emphasize the significance of the role that police play within a broader governmental service provision system.
So what should be the goal then, in your view, of law enforcement? If it's not to respond to crime, if it's not to take some, if it's not first and foremost taking people who are a threat to other people off the street, what do you see as the more overarching, comprehensive police goal?
Oh, this is not – you mustn't misunderstand my position on crime control. I'm absolutely in favor of crime control. I have done it. It is the central imperative for police. It's not as if community policing is somehow a soft, wishy-washy alternate to the notion of effective crime control. It is a style. It is an attitude. It is a relationship that you have with the community. And the control of crime remains absolutely central to their purpose. But, you know, there's some other views on how to do crime control with a different stance and style. We have had some experience with aggressive, in-your-face, zero-tolerance style of policing, which some departments have sort of substituted for the notion of community policing. We know that there's a vast gulf between actual victimization levels and reported crime rates. And there's, in some agencies, there's quite a lot of integrity issues on crime reporting. And so there's another gulf between what's reported and what's actually recorded. Now, I do believe that the crime mission is on actual victimization rates. And therefore, you need a degree of closeness and trust. And if you have more closeness and trust with some communities, surprise, surprise, the reported crime rate would actually go up because they'd be more inclined to tell you things and wouldn't be so fearful of going to the police station. So there are different ideas about how to do crime control, not whether it's an important mandate. Of course it is. And there's also quite different ideas about whether crime control is the principal overriding imperative or whether that's a part of a much bigger, broader police role that would include things like the protection of the vulnerable, free traffic movement, control of traffic accidents and fatalities, protection of vulnerable populations of one kind or another. All of these are parts of the public safety role.
There probably, though, is an inherent tension here, because most of us want to have police available to us if we're victims of a crime or under threat of having a crime against us. But the rest of the time, we'd probably just soon not see police and you know, go about our day without, you know, feeling as though there's a need for a police presence. So when you're in a high crime area where there are larger number of crimes than average in the broader community, how do you deal with that dynamic tension between people, you know, preferring not to have, you know, police right there in their face and wanting them available to respond?
Well, we all need police, and there's a right level and density of policing, and there's a right style of policing. No one wants to see a police officer on every corner or get the sense that they're invading your privacy when there's absolutely no reason for them to do so. You certainly don't want them barking orders at you every time that you come close to one. And yes, we all would like them to be there. Now, in other countries where police officers seem sometimes more approachable, more courteous, more polite, no one minds them being there, and they often go to them to ask for directions or help. When the police adopt an aggressive posture or stance and they regard themselves as the, you know, they behave in some communities almost as if they're an army of occupation, then of course people don't want to see them. And at the same time, the response in minority neighborhoods and vulnerable neighborhoods is often for police to either do over-policing, which seems oppressive, or to swing to the alternate extreme and do under-policing, thinking, you know, we're really not appreciated there, we won't go there unless we absolutely have to. And then you're losing that essential contact that gives you a real sense of what the problems are and how to deal with them.
Of course, the challenge is having sufficient person power to do that, right? Because to do the kind of community policing, to really do it, often takes more personnel than a lot of the urban, you know, particularly like LAPD, which is way understaffed compared to other urban departments. You know, it's tough to do. They're covering a huge area. To ask them sort of be a present and hang out with people.
No, I don't agree. I think if your idea of community policing is that you're going to cover the entire city with foot patrols, then yes, that would require an enormous number of people, and that's obviously not going to happen in the current environment. But even given current resource levels, there's an awful lot of choice available about style, posture, stance, the way that you treat people, the nature of the interactions, how you organize your attention, what you do on the proactive and preventive front rather than just answering calls.
All right.
I think there's an enormous range of choice with an existing resource level.
Malcolm Sparrow, thank you so much for being with us. Harvard University professor, and for 10 years in British law enforcement. The name of his book, Handcuffed, What Holds Policing Back and the Keys to Reform.